So good morning, we're here at Channel 9 today, and I'll be interviewing my old friend Martijn van der Houten. Martijn is the CEO, founder of Assistant Software in the Netherlands. And the reason we're interviewing Martijn today is to get his experience on going the transition from on-premise to the cloud. One of the biggest questions that we get from ISVs is, what happens in the real world? We've provided some advice, Microsoft has all kinds of information that's available on the web on what they should be doing, but what ISVs really want to know is what happens on the ground when someone actually goes through that transition. So today we're going to talk to Martijn about what he's done, because he's been in business, he's got a fantastic company, it's a PSA software, professional services automation, and he's been through a number of different journeys going from different platforms, and he's now become very successful in the cloud. So today we're going to benefit from the experiences Martijn has had and what he's done well and some of the challenges that he had to overcome during this journey. So Martijn, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Yes, good morning, Harold.
So the weather in Amsterdam nice today?
It's pretty cold at this moment.
Oh, okay. But not cold enough to go skating?
No. Not cold enough to go skating. No, that's true. Sure. Yeah.
So let's start with a little bit of an introduction of Assistant Software, how the company started. You've been in business for quite a while. And just a short overview of your history, what the product does, the target market that you're going after.
Yes. So Assistant Software is in business for 25 years. So this year, actually, we have our 25-year anniversary. And since 2008, we have developed solutions for the Microsoft platform and since 2011 for the Microsoft CRM platform. For more than 15 years, we are really focused on the professional services industry. And since 2008, we are internationally focused on that industry, and we have a partner network of around 250 partners and 10,000 plus users at this moment. And our platform that we chose for is Microsoft Dynamics CRM. So we have redeveloped our solution from a .NET on-premise solution to a CRM, full-blown CRM solution within Microsoft CRM, and that's PSA for Microsoft CRM.
So PSA covers a lot of different industries. What's your focus? What kind of companies are you selling to primarily?
Yes, we are really focused on the real professional service industry. So companies like architects, engineers, management consultancy companies, IT companies, all kind of company, legal, accountancy. So all kind of companies where time and knowledge of people is the most important asset.
Okay, so you've been through a number of platform changes. Could you just walk us through some of the phases that you've gone through, what you were on, built on initially, and then when you moved over to Microsoft and why you did that, and then more specifically, why you decided to make the transition to the cloud and how you did that?
Yeah, so when I started my company, I was 18 years old, so that was back in 1990. And I started developing on DBase 3 and Clipper at that time. The summer 87 version, I remember that version. But then we moved to object-oriented development with visual objects. And later we developed on C# with a SQL database as a backend platform. And that was basically our third wave. And our fourth wave was we have developed our PSA solution for the CRM 2011 platform. And of course now for CRM 2015. So we changed platforms, and since 2011, since Microsoft CRM 2011 came out, we really made a definite choice to go for that platform and to go with our solution to the cloud. So actually going to make the decision to go to the cloud was also at the same time when we made the platform choice.
So what was that decision driven by? Was it customer demand? Was it Microsoft pushing you to move into the cloud? What actually triggered the decision?
Basically, Microsoft was not really pushing, or customers at that time were also not really pushing, but it was just a very logic step to take when you look at the IT landscape at this moment. People like to have everything in the cloud, they don't like to have their own server in-house anymore. Keeping up with technology is very hard for a lot of companies, it's not their core business, so the cloud makes a lot of sense. I must say we are very international, and I must say in the US, especially when we started with the cloud, US and Canada, there was a lot of early adoption of the cloud. In Europe, we see that since the last 2 years that it's much, much, much bigger now, the cloud, than it was before. So since 2012, 2013, it really is moving forward now, the cloud. And the States were much earlier adopting the cloud than here in Europe.
Did you look at any different platform options, or did you just say from the get-go that this was going to be Microsoft's going to be CRM, or did you look at what other options were available in the marketplace for you?
Yeah, we looked at other options. We knew that we want to redevelop our legacy PSO solution, what's called Assistance PSO, to a new solution to keep up with the newest technology. And the cloud was definitely number one on our ambition list. And to go to the cloud to redevelop our PSO legacy solution, an on-premise solution based on C#, SQL Server database, to redevelop all the technology in the cloud was really a too big hurdle to take. So for us, moving to Microsoft CRM was an obvious choice, because then basically the CRM platform provides already the cloud, provides already different cloud options. You can go for CRM online, or you can go to a private hoster, or you can host it yourself, and you still have the option to go on-premise. We see that 80% of our business is now cloud-driven, but still that you can go to on-premise makes it easier to make that transition for our clients.
That is interesting, because you are definitely pursuing a hybrid business model. How's that impacted your marketing? Do you see different segmentation? Do you see different types of customer size of customers or vertical markets that prefer on-prem versus the cloud? Or has the adoption been fairly evenly distributed across segments?
Now, the first years, it was still, so when we came out with our solution in 2010, 2011, this new solution, it was really still more focused on-premise. But there was also a cloud demand. At that time, Microsoft was also not pushing the cloud that much. But since they are pushing CRM online tremendously, we see a much higher demand on cloud. And what you see is that a lot of companies, because of the last 5 years of the challenges in the economy, that a lot of businesses did not invest in new technology, so they stayed on their old service, on their old platforms, and now they want to have the most new technology, and to reinvest everything again instead of going to the cloud, is it for a lot of companies a no-brainer to really now make the decision to go to the cloud, because a lot of hardware, basically, they invested on that hardware like 5 years ago, so now there's a new reinvestment policy, and then to reinvest in hardware again and not move to the cloud, is not really a very logic choice. So we see even big companies like, for example, Fucro is thinking about the cloud. Hey Group already made the decision to go to the cloud. It's a company, a consulting company, more than 40 plus countries with more than 3,500 seats. They moved already to CRM Online in this case. So we see small, medium, and also enterprise companies are moving to the cloud very fast at this moment.
That's wonderful. Good to hear that. Now, when a company makes the move from on-premise to the cloud, it impacts virtually every part of the organization. And what I'd like to do is just walk you through some of the functional areas in the organization. And if you could explain what some of the challenges were and how you overcame them, the issues that you had to deal with. So let's start with pricing. Did you have to make any adjustments to the pricing of the product when you went into the cloud? Did that impact the pricing on prem?
Absolutely. We have a monthly subscription pricing, and basically that's very competitive. It's also very similar to the pricing that Microsoft CRM Online provides. Our license model is completely changed. Basically, we have the same license model as Microsoft CRM Online. So you have an Essentials PSA license, a Basic PSA license, and an Enterprise license. So then it's very simple for a customer to combine those two licenses, because you choose the same license types. And also the pricing point is not similar to CRM Online, but very close. It's important that if you have a technology platform and your monthly subscription on the technology platform like CRM Online, that the solution like we provide, like PSA, is not like triple or very expensive in comparison to your technology platform. There needs to be a balance, so we changed that completely. I must say, for a company that came, of course, from on-premise deals in the past, the first year we really had a drop in revenue. When we started with the cloud, and the reason is that we were used, when we had for example a 200-300 seat deal, we made 200,000 euros or $200,000 on the on-premise licenses, and then our partners made another 200k on the services, and that was a very normal deal size for us. With the cloud, actually, we have a completely different story. If they close a license agreement with us in October, we have only October, November, December, so only 3 months of license revenue per month. And it's a very low license revenue. And in the cloud, we see also that in a pilot stage, a client starts with like 10 seats. They have a rollout opportunity to 3,500 seats, but they start with 10 seats. So we had a drop in licenses. But what the great thing is about the cloud, that if you overcome that hurdle, that then after 3 months, the next year, you have 12 months of revenue. So then you have a tremendously increase of revenue with all those cloud subscriptions that you basically close in that specific year. So if you overcome that specific hurdle, then the increase of revenue is really very impressive. And in 2013, we increased our revenue with 50%.
Wow, on a subscription basis.
Yeah, on subscription basis. So, and in 2014, we increased on based on 2013, another 25%. So we see that it increases tremendously because, for example, I just closed a deal in December for 1,200 seats. It was $120,000 of recurring revenue per year. But I only get that full revenue year in the next year, and that's 2015. So it gives a little bit of strange. You need to overcome that hurdle, and you need to look through the numbers when you call for the cloud.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the biggest issues that ISVs are concerned about is the drop in revenues and cash flow, the impact. And one of the things that we're seeing a lot of ISVs doing is that they're writing 12-month contracts with the first year up front in order to smooth out some of those bumps. Were you able to do that initially? What's your pricing and contract strategy now? Is it all month to month, or are you signing contracts where they pay on an annual basis?
Now we have some incentives to especially for the bigger seat deals to have basically upfront payments. For example, if you do an upfront payment of a year, you get 1 month for free. If we give a lot of discount on our monthly subscription, we do only that big discount if you do an upfront payment. So we have some incentives there. But for the SMB market, small, medium business market, it's all monthly based. So basically what we see, enterprise deals, we have upfront payments but connected always to attractive discounts. So if you want a discount, yes, but then upfront payment. And with the monthly subscriptions, that's all for SMB market.
Okay. And another perception that's in the marketplace is that because it's a SaaS-based application, it drives down the needs for services. So integration, customization, data migration, custom app development, that the services load ends up being smaller. That's the perception in the marketplace. Have you found that to be true? Or do you find that the services component of a transaction doesn't change much, especially in the enterprise space?
Yeah, in the enterprise space, the services does not change much. But I must say, it's not 2015 anymore to have a solution that you pay. Let's say in this specific deal, we have 1,200 seats. That specific client, because 1,200 seats got a lot of discounts, so they pay $10 per user per month. So that's in this case, it's an interesting value for us. It's around $12,000 a month. But you cannot have a subscription model for $12,000 a month. Let's say the implementation will cost you $400,000 or $500,000. That's really not, that there's no balance anymore. So in other words, you need, especially SMB, if you go for small, medium business, that is also an important part of our business model, you need to align your services model with a cloud model. It's not possible to, if, for example, a 100-seat deal for us was always around €80,000 or $80,000. And then it was pretty normal to have another $80,000 for implementation. Mm-hmm. Now, a deal like that with 100 seats, people pay around $30 per user per month and $15 for a timesheet user in this case. So, and in most cases, they start with 10 users during the implementation because that's the implementation team. So let's say that's $300 a month. So if you pay $300 a month during implementation, you cannot invoice $80,000 for those services. It's just not possible. Right. So we are really teaching our partners to do fast-track implementations to make people very happy in a short time for a fixed fee. And of course, after people are happy and are basically locked on your cloud platform, then they need services, then they need more integration, then they need more customization, they need more workflow. So you will get those services, but you need to do it smart. So you first start with a turnkey model, because also the software is turnkey, so including maybe services or have also maybe a fixed fee for services to start with the product, and then of course people will extend. That will happen, but you need to propose it differently than you did in the past.
You raised an interesting point there, and that's fixed fee package services, which is a real change in the business model for a lot of partners. How important do you think that is in order to be successful with a subscription model, to be able to say, this is the implementation, you get 20 users initially, and it's going to cost you X, and that's it. And so they know exactly what the costs are going to be for that initial implementation. Is that something that ISVs really need to build into their planning?
Yes, absolutely. And if you are an ISV like us with partners, you also need to educate your partners on that model. Because partners really have, and specifically those high-end consultancy partners, they really have the whole in their genes that you start with a scope session, a blueprint session, a scope document, and before you start it, you already spent 50K on the requirements of the client. But if you are selling in the cloud, a lot of people expect out-of-the-box functionality, turnkey solutions. And it means that you cannot have in your sales cycle the whole pitch that it's cheap, it's in the cloud, you don't have to worry, it's easy to use, and then when you implement it, it takes 500,000 euros. That's not matching at all. So what you need to do, what we do, we have fast-track packages, so we have basically a standard implementation methodology with also a lot of stuff that's excluded. So no customizations, only out-of-the-box adoption of the solution. We can then offer a fixed fee, but you need to be trained, so we have a whole package. And that package, that's what we educate our partners in. So they can basically have a turnkey project for those clients. And it's really not only small, medium businesses anymore that's looking for that. We are now in a cycle with a big telco firm. I cannot give you the name yet, but it will be closing. And they also, they got a whole quote from a partner of us, including services from Microsoft services. And they brought basically the classical implementation methodology with all the sure steps. And that big telco firm said, okay, this goes first too slow, and second is too expensive. So then when we teach Microsoft services our fast track methodology, basically an agile methodology, lean, mean, and also not too expensive, and have a quick win, then that's now adopted by that specific client. And now Microsoft Services is implementing this at that client. And of course, they need to have integrations with other platforms. They need to do customization, but that will all be phase two. So then in phase one, there is a quick win.
Okay, well, I'm going to go off on just a little bit of a tangent here because you mentioned agile. And so let's talk a little bit about engineering and product development. As you moved into the cloud, did you change any of your product development processes, the way you go, you build a product? Did you have to make any changes on your engineering and product development team in order to accommodate the cloud version?
To be honest, for us, the product development is not very changed when we compare it to our on-premise development, because with our platform, we don't have to worry about the cloud, because the cloud is provided by Microsoft in our case. So we don't have to worry about the technology behind the cloud. We just focus on our solution and the business processes that we need to cover in our solution. Okay. So from that standpoint, it's not a change. What is very nice from the cloud and with the cloud is that we involve our partners and users as early adopters very, very early in the game. So we have an early adopter program, and then our users and partners can basically access directly after development at the same time as I see it, to basically give a go or no go to go to the next step. They can see also the process of development. So what we do with those early adopter programs is that partners and end users get access to our R&D service. They are on Windows Azure, and we give them access to our Azure server. And that means that as soon as we are pre-launching functionality, that will be launched internal to our own people here, but also to our early adopters. So we get very early in the process feedback and see with that feedback if we are on the right track.
Okay. Well, let's pivot back to the partners, because they're an important part of your sales ecosystem. Did you see a change in the type of partners and the relationship with your partners when you went from on-prem to the cloud? Did you keep the same partners? Was there resistance? How has your channel strategy changed with the cloud version of the product?
Yeah. Microsoft and our company, we have exactly the same agenda, and we're all pushing partners to the cloud. So they hear the message from Microsoft and they hear the message from us. So, and more they hear the message from clients as well. And that has really, in Europe, for example, but also we see that in the States, to do with that people need to reinvest in new hardware to keep up with the new technology. And this is, for a lot of companies, a very natural point to make a decision. Will I reinvest in all my own hardware, or will it go to the cloud? So there is a lot of push from end users, from partners, from Microsoft and from us to partners to make that move. Only in very complicated and highly, and when there are a lot of legacy solutions involved, they maybe made the decision to go to a private cloud or to go to on-prem still. But again, when you look at our revenue stream, 70% is cloud-based at this moment.
Okay. And how much goes through partners? Are you still selling direct, or do you sell exclusively through partners, turn all the leads over to them, or do you segment based on the deal size or the geography?
When we started with our partner model, it was very natural for us that when we got a lead on the website to directly push it to the partner. That's a strategy that we have left, and now we have a sales team here in the States, in Fort Lauderdale, and we have a sales team here in Amsterdam, and we do direct sales. We don't sell, but we do direct. We basically do the whole sales cycle, and then we involve the partner when we are talking about implementation. So we are close, we are following the lead very closely, and we think as an ISV we can do the best demo, always better than a partner, or we do it together. So for enterprise deals, we work a lot together with Microsoft. So Microsoft involves us in enterprise deals, like McClattery in the States. Together with Microsoft, we did the whole sales cycle. And then with Microsoft, we select a partner that will fit the needs of that specific end user, like McClattery. That is also an option.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because that mirrors what we're seeing as an overall trend in the marketplace on the channel side, and that is that transactional partners are disappearing, and that it's moving much more towards a services business. Salesforce, of course, is the prime example of that. They don't pay their partners a margin on the sale of the product. The partners aren't expected to sell. They're there purely as implementation partners. And we're seeing the same transition in Office 365. So I guess that would have an impact, a pretty big impact, on how you go through your partner selection process and what the expectations are of the partner.
Yeah, but we still get 40 points to our partner. So partners are important. So they get 40% also on the cloud business. So what they lose with Microsoft CRM Online, to be honest, because there's a lot of direct sales going on there, they gain with an ISV like us. So for them to select an ISV to specialize and to focus on a specific vertical is very beneficial, also from the license perspective, and also because we create recurring revenue for our partner. So every year they get those 40 points. It's not only when they do the first sell. So partners are important for us, and to keep partners happy, they will always follow the money, right?
Yeah, you might actually get some calls as a result of this interview. That's a very generous policy for the channel.
Yeah, so for us, supporting partners is really not because we want to do the business direct. It's more that we want to make sure that we have the best skills available and the best people available to close the sales cycle.
Okay. Well, another trend that we're seeing on the product side is that ISVs, and Dynamics is a good example of this, it's not just a package solution, it's not just the S in SaaS. It's also a platform for others to build IP on top of that. That's what you've done on CRM. Do you position your own product as a platform so that partners can come in and do custom app development, they can build add-ons and extensions on top of assistance? Is that possible?
Absolutely. We have a whole ISV directory of partners that build IP on top of our product. So with PSA, you do time entry, expense entry, project management, resource planning, invoicing, contract management. And when you do invoicing, you need to connect to a financial backend. And that's where our partners come in. So we have partners that are very specialized in Dynamics AX or GP or SL or NFE, but also partners that are specialized in SAP or Oracle, and they connect basically PSA to the financial backend. So that last mile, that's very important. And delivering integration services, that's what our partners also do. So they're very important from that perspective to have a happy customer.
Okay. Well, this has been great, Martijn. So I think we'll just summarize this now. And it sounds like this has worked out really well for you. Do you have any advice for companies that are looking that are at the front end of the journey? You've been going through this for 4 or 5 years, so you've overcome a lot of the hurdles. What advice would you have for a company that's sitting on the fence saying, well, we probably need to move to the cloud. Should we do it now? Should we wait? It really changes too much in our business. We're not ready to do it. What kind of advice would you give to a company that's going through that thought process now?
Yes, it's basically not an option to not go to the cloud. It's a no-brainer. You need to go to the cloud if you want to survive in this market. So that's not something you can discuss within your company. I don't think it's a meaningful discussion, because the cloud is there, and that's the next step, and that's already happening today. It's very successful today. So if you know that you need to go to the cloud, then you need to accept that you will have a drop in revenue when you look at your licenses model. But also, you need to have a long-term vision, and a long-term vision is not 10 years, but if you look at your spreadsheet in 3 years, then you will see that the cloud is very beneficial for you. And the third thing is very important for any ISV, is that your company is much more worth when you go to the cloud, because you have recurring revenue. In our case, our on-premise licenses, people can basically they can still cancel their agreements with us, their software service level agreement with us, and they use our solution. We have a lot of clients because of the economy in Europe. They cancel their SLA with us, but they still use our solution. With the cloud, that never can happen. So in other words, your company is much more worth if you have a lot of recurring revenue that's in the cloud than on-premise. So with those three things, you can overcome that first year hurdle of basically calming down in revenue.
Well, that's great, Martijn. Thank you very much. You've actually summarized it better than I could myself. But it's okay. Be prepared to absorb that little loss or that little hit in revenues as you make the transition, make a commitment to the cloud. And if it's successful as you've been, you've got 70% of your revenues now coming from recurring revenues from the cloud, and that percentage seems to be growing.
Absolutely.
Job well done. We really appreciate you taking the time to share your experiences and some of the challenges and how you've overcome those with us on Channel 9 today. So enjoy the rest of your winter in Amsterdam, and we'll hopefully some of the Norwegians will beat you in the World Championships in skating.
Yes. See you soon, Harold.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.